Chapter 4. This world, as I have found out, and if you don't brag a little for yourself, depend on it there is no person of your acquaintance who will tell the world of your merits, and take the trouble off your hands. So that when I came back to the office after my visit at home, and took my seat at the old day book opposite the dingy window that looks into Birchin Lane, I pretty soon let the fellows know that Mrs. Haggarty, though as he had not given me a large sum of money, as I expected indeed, I had promised a dozen of them a treat down the river, should the promised riches have come to me, I let them know, I say, that though my aunt had not given me any money, as he had given me a splendid diamond, worth at least 30 guineas, and that some day I would sport it at the shop. "Oh, let's see it," says Abednego, whose father was a mock jewel and gold lace merchant in Anway Yard, and I promised that he should have a sight of it as soon as it was set. As my pocket money was run out to by coach hire to and from home, 5 shillings to our maid at home, 10 to my aunt's maid and man, 25 shillings lost at whist, as I said, and 15 and 6 paid for a silver scissors for the dear little fingers of somebody, round hand, who was very good-natured, asked me to dine, and advanced me 7 L. 1s. 8 D. A month's salary. It was at round hand's house, Middleton Square, Pentonville, over a fillet of veal and bacon and a glass of port, that I learned, and saw how his wife ill-treated him, as I have told before. Poor fellow! We under-clerks all thought it was a fine thing, to sit at a desk by oneself, and have 50 L. per month, as round hand had. But I've a notion that Hoskins and I, blowing duets on the flute together in our second floor in Salisbury Square, were a great deal more at ease than our head and more in harmony too, though we made sad work of the music, certainly. One day Gus Hoskins and I asked leave from Round Hand to be off at 3 o'clock, as we had particular business at the West End. He knew it was about the great Haggarty diamond, and gave us permission. So off we set. When we reached St. Martin's Lane, Gus got a cigar, to give himself as it were a distinguer, and pulled at it all the way up the lane, and through the alleys into Coventry Street, where Mr. Polonius's shop is, as everybody knows. The door was open, and a number of carriages full of ladies were drawing up and setting down. Gus kept his hands in his pockets. Trousers were worn very full then, with large tucks, and pigeon holes for your boots, or bluchers, to come through. The fashionables wore boots, but we chaps in the city, on 80 L. a year, contented ourselves with bluchers, and as Gus stretched out his pantaloons as wide as he could from his hips, and kept blowing away at his cheroot, and clamping with the iron heels of his boots, and had very large whiskers for so young a man, he really looked quite the genteel thing, and was taken by everybody to be a person of consideration. He would not come into the shop though, but stood staring at the gold pots and kettles in the window outside. I went in, and after a little hemming and hawing, for I had never been at such a fashionable place before, asked one of the gentlemen to let me speak to Mr. Polonius. "What can I do for you, sir?" says Mr. Polonius, who was standing close by, as it happened, serving 3 ladies, a very old one and 2 young ones, who were examining pearl necklaces very attentively. "Sir," said I, producing my jewel out of my coat pocket, "this jewel has, I believe, been in your house before. It belonged to my aunt, Mrs. Haggarty, of Castle Haggarty." The old lady standing near looked round as I spoke. I sold her a gold neck chain and repeating watch in the year 1795, said Mr. Polonius, who made it a point to recollect everything, and a silver punch ladle to the captain. "How is the Major Colonel General, eh, sir?" "The General," said I am sorry to say, though I was quite proud, that this man of fashion should address me so. Mr. Haggarty is no more. My aunt has made me a present, however, of this trinket which, as you see, contains her husband's portrait, that I will thank you, sir, to preserve for me very carefully, and she wishes that you would set this diamond neatly. Neatly and handsomely, of course, sir. Neatly, in the present fashion, and send down the account to her. There is a great deal of gold about the trinket, for which, of course, you will make an allowance. To the last fraction of a sixpence, says Mr. Polonius, bowing and looking at the jewel. 'Tis a wonderful piece of goods, certainly, said he, though the diamond's a neat little bit, certainly. Do, my lady, look at it. The thing is of Irish manufacture, bears the stamp of 95, and will recall perhaps the times of your ladyship's earliest youth. Get thee out, Mr. Polonius, said the old lady, a little wizen-faced old lady, with her face puckered up in a million of wrinkles. How dare you, sir, to talk such nonsense to an old woman like me? Wasn't I 50 years old in 95, and a grandmother in 96? She put out a pair of withered, trembling hands, took up the locket, examined it for a minute, and then burst out laughing. As I live, it's the great Agardi diamond. Good heavens! What was this talisman that had come into my possession? Look, girls, continued the old lady. His is the great jewel of all Ireland. This red-faced man in the middle is poor Mick Agardi, a cousin of mine, who was in love with me in the year 84, when I had just lost your poor dear grandpapa. These 13 streamers of red hair represent his 13 celebrated sisters, Biddy, Minnie, Feedy, Witty, short for Wilhelmina, Freddy, Izzy, Tizzy, Missy, Grizzy, Polly, Dolly, Nell, and Belle, all married, all ugly, and all carroty hair. And of which are you the son, young man? Though, to do you justice, you're not like the family. Two pretty young ladies turned two pretty pairs of black eyes at me, and waited for an answer. Which they would have had, only the old lady began rattling on 100 stories about the 13 ladies above named, and all their lovers, all their disappointments, and all the duels of Mick Agardi. She was a chronicle of 50 years old scandal. At last she was interrupted by a violent fit of coughing, at the conclusion of which Mr. Polonius very respectfully asked me where he should send the pin, and whether I would like the hair kept. No, says I, never mind the hair. And the pin, sir? I had felt ashamed about telling my address. Ut, bang it! Thought I, why should I? A king can make a belted knight, a marquess, duke, and a that. An honest man's abune is my good faith, he can afa that. Apostrophe, apostrophe, why need I care about telling these ladies where I live? Sir, says I, have the goodness to send the parcel, when done, to Mr. Titmarsh, number 3 Bell Lane, Salisbury Square, near St. Bride's Church, Fleet Street. Ring, if you please, the 2-pair bell. What, sir? Said Mr. Polonius. What? Shrieked the old lady. Mr. What? Mace, Machir, Kest Impayable. Come along, here's the carriage. Give me your arm, Mr. Watt, and get inside, and tell me all about your 13 aunts. She seized on my elbow and hobbled through the shop as fast as possible, the young ladies following her, laughing. Now, jump in, do you hear? Said she, poking her sharp nose out of the window. I can't, ma'am, says I have a friend. Pooh, pooh. Send 'em to the juice, and jump in. And before almost I could say a word, a great powdered fellow in yellow plush breeches pushed me up the steps, and banged the door to. I looked just for 1 minute as the barouche drove away at Hoskins, and never shall forget his figure. There stood Gus, his mouth wide open, his eyes staring, a smoking cheroot in his hand, wondering with all his might at the strange thing that had just happened to me. Who is that Titmarsh? Says Gus. Here's a coronet on the carriage, by Jingo. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.